Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Documentary about a community in North St. Louis that was about 80% white at one time that took white flight in fear of blacks moving into their area. We understand part of the film, government engineering played a major role in the redlining of Spanish Lake and Ferguson, Missouri. Both are towns in North St. Louis County. So today we'll speak with the director of Spanish Lake, Philip Andrew Morton. who will tell us why he believes his film is currently receiving a blackout in St. Louis due to the tension in Ferguson, Missouri. So good evening, Philip. Welcome to Center Stage.
Hi, Carrie. Hi, Carrie. Thank you for having me.
Oh, listen, I'm glad to have you. Your film, the timing of it is very interesting. I know you all couldn't have planned for it to come out at the time that it did, but is that going to help or hurt your film, do you believe?
I think in the long run it'll definitely help it. Currently it's being blacked out in St. Louis, and that's kind of a pain, but that's even more evidence that it's meant to come out now. Things don't just happen for a reason, and we've had our share of coincidences on this film already, so this just solidifies it. So I think it's going to help.
Okay.
Definitely.
So for those who may not understand, explain why St. Louis County is blocking this film out at this time. Well, what the reason is that they gave you for not allowing it to be viewed in St. Louis right now?
The theater chain that's blocking it is called Werenberg Theaters. It's more of a Midwest chain of theaters, and they were scheduled to play the film on September 5th, and this was before the Mike Brown shooting. And once that happened, we got a call from them, and they told us that that was no longer going to happen and that they wouldn't play our film. And so we took that story to press, and now they're kind of denying that they said that. And their reasons to us were just, no, it's just with everything that's going on, it's too intense and it's just not going to happen. To me, what they said to the press, though, is that they were scared it was going to get lost amidst the media going crazy about Ferguson. To me, that makes no sense. Well, how could a film like that get lost? If anything, it puts a big spotlight on it. I think they were scared of both the political message as well as the reaction of crowds after seeing the film, probably particularly the African-American community. So.
Okay, that said, why do you feel that basically the feelings of African-Americans after viewing the film would be bad? Explain to our audience why do you feel that way?
Well, the film, Spanish Lake, chronicles the town of Spanish Lake in North County, St. Louis, North St. Louis, and how it changed from a primarily white community to primarily black. That was done through the process of social engineering, and that whole area, including Ferguson, had been circled and basically redlined from the 1960s through the 1990s as the destination to move African Americans from the city into the suburbs. It was a planned resegregation. It was never really a planned integration. St. Louis has never had a riot before. They did way, way back in the day, but not even in the 60s. They never had a riot like Watts or Detroit. And that's because of the aggressive resegregation plan that St. Louis had. They just wanted to give the illusion that they were giving the African Americans a step up, but really it was just kind of a equilateral move, and that's why part of the uprising in Ferguson is what it is. This population has been ignored. There's been this resegregation, and nobody's talked about it, and that's the reason I made the film.
So. If and not that you're going to do this, but if you decided to, you could take the name Spanish Lake off of your film and put Ferguson, and basically the dynamics would be the same.
Yeah. The social engineering is the exact same, and the social issues are the exact same. In Spanish Lake, there's 3,000 apartment units, and there are these massive megaplexes, very similar to the one that Mike Brown lived in and was killed in. And there are these concentrated spots of poverty. There are these many housing projects, and they're scattered throughout North County. And that is part of the problem, is this concentration of poverty as well as this concentration of African Americans. It's all quarantined in this one area of St. Louis, and then it's ignored, and tax dollars aren't given to it. And the people they're finally fed up. And this is the beginning of a much bigger process.
And you know, the thing is, when I first found out about this film and it being an African American person and and looking at the content, I thought, wow. You know, when I heard that the people that lived in Spanish Lake took white flight in fear of black people moving in, you know, that took me aback just a little bit because I couldn't, you know, I've heard of things like that, but I've never lived it or knew, I guess if I was living it, I didn't know I was living it, let's just say that. And so that said, you know, explain to the audience, when I use the term white flight, what that meant in relation to Spanish Lake and the citizens moving out.
Well, white flight is really an economic phenomenon, but it usually exists between middle to lower income white people and middle to low income black. It doesn't affect the rich at all. Rich neighborhoods aren't affected by this. And it's really, it's the mass exodus of the white population. It actually can be any minority. There's black flight, there's Mexican flight, there's all sorts. But in the case of Spanish Lake, it's this mass exodus of the white population, and they move out partially out of racism, but partially out of fear that if they stay and integrate, their property values will lessen. And this belief system has been in place in the United States for a century, and a lot of it has been instilled by real estate agents. It goes way, way back. It's this belief system, if you stay, black people equal low property value and crime. And when you're taught something from such an early age and it's been passed on decade by decade, it tends to just become truth to a lot of these people. And so it's a mindset. It's a psychological mindset. And it's still going. And that's another reason they made the film, is to stop it from continuing.
You know, you were raised in Spanish Lake until age 10. What I understand about that community, it was just a blue collar community of, you know, a working class of people. And so I'm just amazed that it was 80% white. It wasn't all white. It was 80% white, correct? So what was the makeup of it? If it was 80% and they took flight when black people moved in, what other races were in Spanish Lake at the time?
Well, I lived there actually till I was 18 years old. We lived in my first house till I was 10, and then I moved to a different house in Spanish Lake in a different neighborhood when I was 10. And when I was born, the area was 93% white. And then when we moved out, it was changing drastically. But in 1990, it was 83% white. The rest of those residents were African American, except for maybe about 1 or 2% that might have been Asian or other, but it was one or the other. It was very much black and white population. And growing up, I saw the sea change. I saw the change happening, but for the most part, until the 90s, most of the African American community lived in the apartments. They did not live in the houses.
Okay, so gotcha. So the Spanish Lake community you were in was houses, and then there was apartments outside of that community that was within Spanish Lake as well. And that's that's where the black people were.
Yeah, that was the Section 8. A lot of the Section 8 lived in those.
Okay. And so at what point did they move the house? At what time was this housing boom come in where they brought in all the apartment complexes to Spanish Lake?
The apartment complexes started going in the early 70s. And that coincided with the destruction of the Pruitt-Igoe housing projects in downtown St. Louis. And there was this massive amount of apartments that were built in the northeast corner of St. Louis County. And they were disproportionate to the amount of residents that needed apartments. So when you have this influx of apartments being built, but not enough people to live in them, the landlords aren't going to be making their money because they can't even fill their apartments. So this made for a really nice transition for the population in the city to fill those empty spots. And so when Pruitt-Igoe was destroyed, there was a whole bunch of empty apartments in Spanish Lake. Those landlords were looking to make a buck, so the Section 8 voucher system made a lot of sense to them. And so starting in 1974, the last of the Pruitt-Igoe residents were transferred into Spanish Lake apartments. and that it just kind of continued from there. That was the first introduction to African Americans in Spanish Lake.
Okay. And so, where did the fear come from? I guess, you know, someone and I talked yesterday, and he used some terms that just, like, scared me. And I'm African American, and I was just amazed that people would have that type of fear in this day and time. But I think the term he used was like invasion, terror, that white people were just gripped with this image that bringing in black people to their area was just going to just overnight change the climate of where they live, and then therefore their property values would just plummet overnight. I just can't imagine someone being able to sell people a bill of goods like that and they believed it.
Yeah, and it's a major injustice. You know, yes, there is racism, but a lot of these white people were manipulated and terrorized by real estate agents. And many of these white people, they sold their houses at major losses. They lost their investments because the real estate agents were so aggressive. They called them, they came to their doorstep, and they basically said, you know, you need to sell now or you'll get nothing for your house, and you're lucky to sell even for what you're selling for. I have relatives that have sold their houses at major losses. And you've got to also somewhat remember that some of this was taking place in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and, you know, the 90s is a lot more current. But when your parents came from parents that went through it and their parents went through it, you take it as truth, and it makes it a lot easier to be manipulated by real estate agents and your government when you're already psychologically programmed. I think some of it is racism, but I think a lot of it is that fear of your investment going downhill. But St. Louis is such a segregated city that the mixing of black and white is still so foreign, and, you know, it's just due to the policies, and it's due to, you know, our history. But I wanted to shine a light on how racism is still very much alive, whether that's systemic racism or perceived racism or just outright racism, that we are still so divided. That's something that, you know, I think is shocking, and it hearing it from you, that makes sense. Yeah.
Because when I heard you say that, I had to think you had to be somewhat racist to buy into that, because without ever meeting a person and giving them a chance to automatically assume the worst, you'd have to have, you know, that instilled into you that, you know, you just believe this person is 100% bad, and we know no one is 100% bad. But I think you'd have to believe that in order to just pack up your family and you know, sell your house at a loss just to get out of there. I mean, that's crazy.
I agree. But I also think part of that is it's more of that belief system and the property value. Some of these people that moved weren't racist. They didn't. Mm-hmm. They actually probably had a lot of black friends and went to, you know, some of the same schools with them. But it's that belief system of property value and, you know, race tied together, that it doesn't matter if you have a family member that's black. But if you believe that your house will go down in value if your neighborhood starts to get integrated, that becomes a financial issue. And that's really at the root of a lot of this. And I can tell you from experience, you know, like for myself, our family moved during the white flight, and having been younger and hearing all this stuff with any kind of brainwashing or any kind of, you know, psychology, you'll believe anything if you hear it from your parents or adults. And it's a financial fear less than a racial fear. And it's hard to explain unless you've been through it. But I know a lot of other communities across the U.S., especially Ohio, Illinois, Michigan, a lot of these states have dealt with the white flight exactly the same. And I think when they see Spanish Lake, the story will really ring true to them, and it will become kind of like an exorcism of sorts, where they can get this off their chest and say, oh my gosh, you know, we weren't racist. We moved because we were bullied out, or we were scared out. And that's really, it's hard to believe, but it's true.
And to be clear, for anyone that just tuned in, we're talking to Philip Andrew Morton. He's the director of a new film called Spanish Lake. in Spanish Lake, if you took the label off and said Ferguson, the film would still be the same. And Ferguson is how far from Spanish Lake?
I believe it's 5 to 6 miles down the highway. Very, very close. It's just like a neighboring suburb. I spent a lot of time in Ferguson growing up, so it practically is my hometown, even though it's technically not. But even like some of the stores that were rioted, one of the shoe stores that was on the news that was rioted, I used to go get my shoes there. So, you know, to me, it's my community. It's all close together.
And don't you have relatives that still live in Ferguson?
Yeah, my father lives in Ferguson currently, yeah.
And so, you know, how did he feel about you releasing this film now in light of what's going on in Ferguson?
Well, the film had first went into theaters in June, just a couple of months ago, and it made quite a big stir in the local news because it is a controversial subject and it's an issue that's so, you know, so sensitive in St. Louis still. He supported it. You know, I think everybody kind of brings something different to the table when they watch the film, and I think he was just happy that the subject was being discussed because it's affected him on more than one occasion. He's had to move a few times because of the white flight, so he's supportive, yeah.
And so when you heard about Ferguson and, you know, looked at the timing of your film, what did you think?
It's very surreal. I mean, it's surreal when you're living in Los Angeles and you turn on the news and you see your hometown being tear gassed and military tanks rolling around. The whole thing, whether it would have taken place in New Hampshire or Florida or wherever, you know, the whole thing is surreal. And to see it in my hometown and to know that it was so closely tied to the release of my film, deep down, it makes sense to me. I was driven to make this film for years. And in 2011, I started filming it. And it just seemed to mirror the nation at large. A lot of the core issues of Spanish Lake in terms of lack of community, racial divide, and abuse of government power, they were all really tied into what was going on. We started to see the Occupy movements really pick up steam during that time. The Tea Party was really starting to pick up steam at that time. And when I started to see the social engineering going on in St. Louis, it alarmed me. And I was like, okay, people's basic freedoms and, you know, are being abused. And St. Louis is one of the most corrupt of them all. And this part of history needs to be uncovered and unraveled now. It took a few years to make the film, but it felt very urgent to me. And now that Ferguson has happened, it seems like there'll be some audiences that can see those themes and understand why I made it. So it's perfect timing, really.
I agree. Yeah, and I understand when you lived, you know, in Spanish Lake, it was predominantly white, about 80%. And now we understand that Spanish Lake is about 77% African-American as of 2010, and a lot of the businesses have left, and a lot of the homes are vacant?
Yeah, a lot of the businesses have left, and there's probably about a 10% vacancy rate in the housing. It's probably not as bad as it was in 2007 when I first went back there, and that was due to the mortgage crisis. But, yeah, there's still a high vacancy rate, but there's still a good, I'd say, about 19,000 people that live there. So it still has a good community, and there's a lot of really great people that still live there and community that exists.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. It's all you.
How has Spanish Lake, in fact, been affected by the riots in Ferguson?
I think the people in Spanish Lake, given how close in proximity they are, they're fearful because, you know, the riots are a scary experience when, you know, businesses are broken into. And I think just the fear of safety was part of, from what I was hearing from people that I know there, that was an issue. And because the racial tension is so high and relations between races in that area are a little bit delicate already, some of the white residents in these areas are a little fearful because they're scared that they'll be made targets due to the anger that a lot of the black residents have been feeling So I think that people in that area just want things to settle down a little bit, and they have now. But those first couple of nights were pretty scary for those two reasons.
Mm. So for those people who are living basically in Spanish Lake, you're saying that what occurred in Ferguson very easily could have occurred in Spanish Lake?
Oh, absolutely. That whole area, it's the same story. And a lot of people will say that in the press. It could have been any one of those municipalities. Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, I guess in looking at your film, you know, you said that basically St. Louis is segregated by race, class, and I think you said religion. Were you speaking of then, or are you speaking of still even currently they're divided that way?
Oh, they're still very much divided, very much. There's outright hostility between all these different groups because they're so segregated. They don't even acknowledge one each other. You know, something that happens in Spanish Lake, the people in, like, south of St. Louis, they could care less. Like, this is probably the first time a lot of residents have even heard of Ferguson or even know where it's at. That's how disconnected the St. Louis community is. And it's been divided and segregated ever since it was created. And that has a lot to do with the people that run St. Louis County. They've designed this whole city according to how they want the people dispersed. And that's the social engineering aspect of it.
And so when someone, you know, first of all, you know, people can demand that your film come to their area. How can they do that?
Well, there's two ways, but the thing I think would be most productive right now is to call AMC Theaters. They're starting to warm up to the idea of programming our film, and our screening in Dallas, which is Thursday, that's also an AMC Theater. It's at AMC North Park 15 on Thursday night. Tickets for that are on tug.com. You can just look that up, and there's still a good, like, 70 tickets left, so if you guys come out, you know, fill that theater, get the word out. But call AMC Theaters and just ask for it to be played. That would be our best bet right now. That would do the best good.
Okay, that would be the most good. And so when someone goes to see the film, what do you hope that they leave with?
Gosh, I mean, I hope they leave with a lot. It's a lot to take in and understand, but the need to come together as a community is more important than ever, and to see beyond race, beyond color, beyond any differences, that we are all Americans and our basic rights have been infringed on in a major way, especially with the martial law in Ferguson. It's a huge wake-up call that we need to look at our past, learn from it, and move beyond it and mend those fences and fight for a greater and common good. This is basic human rights we're talking about. And aside from Mike Brown shooting, which is awful, and, you know, we still aren't being given the truth. His death has opened up so many great questions, and it's a positive thing. We need to look at it as a positive thing and not let it divide us and make us angry, and we need to let go of these racist kind of feelings and stop looking at things in black and white and start looking at things as one country. That's the big theme, because if we don't wake up now, it's going to be too late.
You know, and as I think about your film and as you talk about the project Perdido, and I think about in all these cities where you see housing projects being closed, I think there's one about to be closed in Fort Worth. So explain how the city planner and realtors get together and move people or migrate people to certain areas. How are you saying they do this? He's calling it redlining. How they can just take, explain to the audience how they can do that.
I mean, any city can do it, and lots of cities have done it. city planners are always, you know, trying to figure out how to keep the wealth concentrated in one area. And there's this term gentrification, which is when areas kind of go from, you know, slums or ghettos to up-and-coming areas that are, you know, usually designed for the younger or the wealthy, and those areas start becoming fancy again. And it's the opposite of white flight and redlining. And it's just where government decides to put their money and resources. And for every area that goes up, usually an area goes down. So let's say, you know, you want to gentrify your downtown area. Well, if you start pumping all your money and resources there, you're going to want to displace the people that live there currently. A lot of the poor people, minority people usually, those people need a place to go. And so city planners will have to usually redline a different area of town to put those people because they need a place to go. So they'll look for an area that they see as kind of, it's not as hot anymore, it's cheaper housing, people don't want to live there anymore, it's maybe older, and they'll redline it. So they'll tell the realtors, start steering all these people to this area to live and maybe build some apartments here so we can put the poor people here. This will now become the destination for poor people and minorities. And the people that currently live there will usually be scared out because, you know, they'll see their area changing, and that's the process. So for every area that goes up, an area goes down.
Wow. Do you think that God used you to put this film out at this particular time because it was just time to pull the cover off how they've been doing this for so long?
You know, I think, yeah. I think the universe, and I don't know how to explain it, but when I went back to Spanish Lake in 2007 and saw my old home abandoned and the neighborhood abandoned, my school abandoned, my church abandoned, it was one of the worst days of my life. And I made a promise with the universe that day. And I said, you know, I begged for, I needed closure. I needed healing to a certain degree with a lot of issues from my past. And I took it upon myself to make this documentary because I needed something to make closure. There was no film out about white flight. There was really not much even on the internet about this process and why it happens, how it happens, but how it affects people emotionally on all levels. The white people that used to live there, the black people that moved in, there was no dialogue. And so I took it upon myself to make this film for other people that had gone through it to get closure. But then in investigating it, this whole political stuff started jumping out. And then I was really determined to uncover it. So, yeah, I made a pact with the universe, and now it kind of makes sense. You know, like you said, there's a much bigger reason for this film now. I'm pretty humbled because I had no idea this little documentary could be so important right now.
Wow. God makes no mistakes. So if someone in Ferguson was to get a hold of this or your documentary, how can it help them? What can they do to learn from your documentary and move Ferguson in a different direction?
I think that there's a couple really important things that need to happen after you educate yourself on social engineering. I think you have to realize how important it is that your government representatives have your back, have your interests. And so there's a certain auditing process that needs to happen in government to where your politicians are really examined. So I think Ferguson needs to examine their government and make any changes necessary, but also that to understand the white people that maybe used to live there and your surrounding communities and see how you can come together and see a lot how these misunderstandings can be lifted and how we need to come together more than ever and try to get away from this racial thinking of black and white and men's senses, because if they don't, you know, there's strength in numbers, but right now the strength is limited because of the way the media is framing everything and the racism that's coming up as a result, that needs to go away because this is a governmental issue across the board and it affects everybody.
Wow. You know, I have 100,000 questions running through my head because, you know, when I look at Ferguson and you say Spanish Lake could have been Ferguson or Ferguson could have been Spanish Lake, it's just amazing to me that your film came out when it did. You're getting the blackout in St. Louis. What can people do to get you viewed in St. Louis? Is there anything that they can do?
Like I said, call AMC Theaters. They're the only theater chain right now that's open to showing the film, and they have the power to do so. That's really the best bet to get it into theaters. We're working on our Netflix and video on demand, and that will come soon. We're doing it as fast as we can. But I think in St. Louis particularly, it needs to be seen in a theater with a mixed audience to start that conversation. And AMC has the power to do it. So just call AMC, email AMC, get the message across that there's a strong demand for this film, and where there's demand, there is money, and they will see that and be more likely to program us.
Okay. And again, you're going to be showing in Dallas, Texas on Thursday. And where are you going to be at in Dallas?
North Park 15, and that's an AMC theater. And, yeah, that is still open for tickets. And this is, I mean, I know that Dallas has experienced its share of white flight, and that was part of the reason we chose that city to show in. I think that people in Dallas, especially with Ferguson, it's a fascinating film to see, and it's very important that people are aware of it. So I would love for as many people listening as possible to be there on Thursday and see the film, and then come back to our Facebook page. Spanish Lake Film is our Facebook page, and to keep up with our progress and to support the film. It's a crucial moment.
If there's anybody that you would want to see this film, who is it?
It's a good question. We've had some big people watch the film, really big celebrities. Tyler Perry watched it even as a rough cut, and he was very supportive of it. Yeah, and unfortunately, back then especially, he was really unable to get behind the project due to the controversy of the subject matter. But if I could have anybody watch it, gosh. Honestly, I don't know how to answer that question right now because I think everybody needs to see it. I would almost say somebody who I don't know. I really don't. Or maybe somebody who's in government. Like, I would say Barack Obama, but, you know, he's limited in his power. It needs to be somebody who's very influential and who can wake people up. And I think, I hate to say it, but I think white people need to be more aware of this film because right now they're being blinded by this whole racial aspect of the case, and a lot of racial fear and anger is being used to manipulate the American public right now to not see the real issue at hand, not see the martial law and the violation of basic human rights. They're seeing it as a racial issue, and it's not the case. So they need to be aware of the film just as much as African Americans.
Do you think that your film could help shed light on the fact that, you know, right now our country seems to be being divided, you know, constantly along racial lines? And do you think your film could kind of spotlight how some of that, you know, comes about and maybe heal some of that?
Absolutely. I think it can create an amazing dialogue because a lot of these white people have been manipulated as well. And that should wake people up and say, you know, there's been a major injustice here. And if we can be manipulated by our governments so blatantly, that should get some anger going and redirect that anger. So to take that racial component out, and that's the smokescreen that's been created. And my film seems perfectly kind of tailored to counteract that. And so that's why it's very important that everybody sees it.
Isn't it true that your film was considered so controversial the government wanted to speak with you about it?
Yeah, back in May, we were invited to screen the film for HUD, the House of Urban Development of the division of the federal government. And so we screened it for them and had a question and answer. And it was a very intimidating and somewhat scary experience at first. Because when you get a call from the federal government saying, hey, we want to see your film, and the film happens to criticize the government to a certain degree, you're kind of wondering, hey, are they going to let me out? You know? and when we got into the building is this huge monolithic cement-blocked building that was built in the 60s, and it's a style called brutalism. And it really feels just like one huge housing project in there. It's cold and not very friendly. And so when we were in there, I was just thinking, they work in here? Like, I would hate to work in here. You think government, you think fancy and very kind of extravagant, and this was the dead opposite. And but we had a great, great conversation with many of the people in there, and they were very supportive of the film and very unaware of what was going on in St. Louis. And they told me to contact them if I hear anything about blockbusting and any more white flight going on in the area. So we'll see if that pans out.
And since you brought up blockbusting, define blockbusting for those who may have never heard that term before. How realtors can use blockbusting to clear out a whole neighborhood?
Sure. Well, in a primarily white neighborhood, integration is kind of a new thing, and it needs to be handled very delicately. Blockbusting is the opposite of that. Blockbusting is when real estate agents want to transition a neighborhood from all white to all black quickly, and they use fear to do it. So let's say you have an all-white neighborhood and you have a house for sale and black people move in. Well, after that, all of a sudden flyers will start appearing on people's doorsteps saying, do you want to sell your house? Call, so-and-so to sell your house. And, of course, people are aware of who moves in. And when you see a change, it's a little bit jarring, but, it's no big deal. But then you combine that with flyers on your doorstep. And then sometimes realtors will come knocking around on each door, introducing themselves and saying, hey, if you'd like to sell your house, I'm your person. But when you don't have that, and then all of a sudden you have that, and then you have the introduction of black people, it starts to create kind of a panic because there's this new pattern going on. And then another house goes up for sale, and then that also gets sold to a black person. So there's this change of residence going on top of this constant bugging by the realtors. They start coming around more often. And then another house goes for sale and it's a black person. So there's this kind of changing of the color combined with this panic that's created by the sellers. Then all the neighbors start gossiping and they start panicking. And then the houses just start flipping really fast because they see it as an invasion, and that the realtors start even saying things like, you should think about selling, or if you sell now, you'll get all the money for your house. And this has been going on for decades and decades. So that's how they do it.
And doesn't your film spotlight the fact that there was an actual pact among Spanish Lake residents that they were not to sell to black people?
Yeah. Not even just in Spanish Lake. That whole area, neighbors would come together and gossip and promise that they wouldn't sell to blacks. And I know that sounds racist on the surface of it, and it is. It's very discriminatory, trying to emphasize this connection between property value and race, and some of it is a financial fear. So in their minds, they were just trying to protect their investment, not seeing the racism involved. And had they been more educated to know that race and property value are not tied together, and that if they had allowed for the integration of a neighborhood and stayed instead of fled, their neighborhoods wouldn't have changed so drastically economically. So that misinformation, that miseducation is what creates the fear and the panic and the racism. So that's what needs to be changed. But on the surface, some of those people may have actually had no problem with black people, but they were scared for their investments.
Scared for their investments. So you said when they first started white flight, it was primarily due to the fact that the change was so, I guess, when you and I discussed it off here, that they put in low income black people first, as opposed to migrating people that were working class black people first. They actually put in the people from the housing projects first. Is that the way I understood you say that?
Yes. Yeah, in North St. Louis, in Spanish Lake and Ferguson and all these areas, there was a huge number of apartments that were built. And those apartments were then transitioned to Section 8 housing. And those Section 8 people were coming from the city. That's the quickest way you can transition an area, because poor people have no power. And because they depend on the government for their housing, they are going to live where the government wants them to live. So they're kind of used as pawn pieces if you're looking at like a checkerboard or, you know, a chessboard, it's really easy to move somebody from this area to that area. So the poor people in the apartments were the quickest way to resegregate the area, but also it was the worst way because you're going to have a bigger culture clash going on, and there's going to be more race integration issues because you have not only a race difference, but you also have an economic difference. And once those children go into the school systems, the risk of having more problems in the schools is going to go way up, and that's what happens. And schools are the number one determining factor for property value because families base everything around your school system. So if they see issues at the schools due to the Section 8, then they're not going to live there. And they're going to be more likely to move. And the houses in Spanish, the houses were not shown to African Americans. They were only allowed to live in the apartments.
Wow. So I found that the problem first began in Spanish Lake because, like you said, the community of houses were still pretty much predominantly white, and the apartment complex, you know, quickly became Section 8. But the children were going to school at the same school system, if I'm understanding correctly. And so the problem became a problem because what these kids were hearing at home became a problem at school. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was a combination of things. But, you know, in the film we have some interviews with people talking about race riots. They talk about parent fears because then you have, you know, this whole issue of integration. You have the really racist white people that, you know, they have daughters that go to school with black men, and oh my God, you know, they're gonna rape my daughter, or they're gonna have a baby together. There's all these irrational fears that start coming up that have nothing to do with the reality, but that interferes, and so you'll have a lot of really racist people move right away because they don't even want that possibility to come up. But then the rest of the people that live there, they just kind of deal with it. You know, they accept that schools, there's going to be fights, and there needs to be that first period where people kind of get to know each other, and there's going to be problems. And actually, Spanish Lake was doing an okay job with integration through the 80s when I lived there. It was a slower process, but it wasn't a problem. It wasn't until the real estate agents started coming around and blockbusting the area that the white flight really began. I think they were the big factor in the area flipping like it did.
Wow. So all of this, I mean, this is just unbelievable that, you know, our government, you know, if what you're saying is true, could be a part of creating such tensions, you know, amongst the races and creating problems, you know, like this. So when you think of what's going on in Ferguson now and knowing all that you know about the situation in Spanish Lake, do you feel that what happened or is going on currently in Ferguson is intentional by the government in terms of the tensions, or do you think it just happened as a result of what they did in terms of migrating so many blacks to an area the way they did? Even though I didn't, let me clarify that. Let me. I don't even like the way that came out. First of all, I think everybody has a right to live wherever they want to live. So to be clear on that. But I think what I'm understanding you to say is that the government was basically taking it upon themselves to move people, not like this was actually people's choices. The government kind of made the choice for them. So therefore, putting everybody kind of like in a situation not of their own. Is that the way I'm understanding you to say?
Yeah, if we use the word steering is a really great word to describe that. Yeah, I think African Americans were really only allowed to live in a certain area. They weren't shown other options throughout the rest of the city. So, yeah, there's a strong engineering aspect of it. And a lot, especially the poorer people, they definitely were very limited on where they could live. And Mike Brown lived in one of those apartment complexes that were built in the 70s for poorer people, for the Section 8. And once you're in that kind of system, it's really hard to break out of that cycle of poverty.
Wow. So when you see Ferguson today and you know basically the makeup of Ferguson, do you see the situation getting better
you know, because ultimately it could spill over to Spanish Lake. Do you see it getting better, or do you see the situation not getting any better anytime soon?
It's a really hard question to answer right now. Now, I was just in Ferguson just like a couple months ago visiting my dad and doing some work downtown, and Ferguson was actually on its way back up. The downtown area had been revitalized. The community was working together. The racial tensions were not bad at all. They were actually doing pretty well. Now that this has happened there, I don't know. I'm starting to wonder if some of the white residents are going to be more panicked because of the riots and fearful of their safety, maybe fearful that it could happen again, and that the surrounding areas, that they might actually start pick up in terms of white flight. And I actually, it definitely made relations between the races worse in the St. Louis area at large. Now, in terms of Ferguson, I think Ferguson is still doing pretty well as a community and not letting this get the best of them. But in terms of the greater St. Louis community, it's made things a lot worse. And I'm seeing a lot of outright racism on Facebook and on comments on articles. And it's become kind of a cause celeb for race. In St. Louis and throughout America, it's inflamed people because of the way the media has put it out there.
Well, you know, seeing that you're in the, you know, we're living in the St. Louis County area, do you agree that the police department, you know, basically racially profile blacks in that area and call situations like what happened with Mike Brown to occur simply because they basically for petty crimes? I mean, I don't even know if jaywalking is really considered a crime. You know, to tell a man to get out of the street and make a big issue and eventually kill someone over jaywalking, is that the kind of environment that Ferguson and Spanish Lake has?
Yeah, I mean, that's a St. Louis-wide thing. I have been unlawfully pulled over in St. Louis twice when I lived there. Once was in the city and once was in the county. The reason I was pulled over in the county is because I was younger and I was driving a Chevy Cavalier through a very rich neighborhood. I did nothing wrong, and I got pulled over by a cop, and he pulled me over to profile me because my car wasn't up to their standards, and I was an outsider in their neighborhood, and it was them to scare me off. That's the thing about St. Louis, is that, and I try to emphasize that, yes, race is a component in the situation, but it's really about corruption of power. And it's about economic equality, inequality, that the rich in St. Louis control everything. And it's a very small percentage of the population. And they don't want the middle class whites near them. They don't want the lower class whites near them. They don't want the blacks near them. And so there's a general disrespect to the greater community of St. Louis with the police force. They can do whatever they want. The second case, I was in downtown, and I was pulled over by a black cop. And I had a black girlfriend in the car with me. And I, same thing, does nothing wrong. I get pulled over, and he comes up and he hits my window with a flashlight really hard. I thought he was going to break the glass. And just, he was high on some kind of drug. And just the same thing, corruption of power. He saw something he didn't like and decided to use his power, his authority, in an abusive way, and just used it to terrorize us. So, yes, the profiling in Ferguson is true due to the fact that a lot of the police force just have no respect for the citizens in general. They feel like they are above the law, and this use of martial law in Ferguson, because Ferguson is not a completely black neighborhood. There's still a sizable white population there, and they are affected, and they are put under this kind of quarantine, and the white protesters were also tear gassed. I want to emphasize how much that this is just a basic human rights thing. Yes, there is racial profiling, but as I pointed out, I've been profiled in two different locations for two different reasons. We have to get beyond the racial profiling of it and just see how Mike Brown and that other man who was killed just a few days later in St. Louis, how you don't need to kill somebody to sedate them. You can use stun guns, you can use tasers, you can use tranquilizers. No matter the case, people should be allowed to live and at least serve the sentence that they deserve or be given a just trial. you know.
I 100% agree. Well, Philip, in closing comments, what would you like people to know about your film and invite them to come out and view it, and also tell them again how they can get your film in their area?
Well, the film is due to come out on Netflix and on demand in probably October or late September. In the meantime, please go to our Facebook page. It's Spanish Lake Film. And look for our updates, because you never know, things can change. Spread the trailer and the information around to your friends. The film is showing in Dallas at AMC North Park 15 this Thursday, the 28th. Tickets are online at tugg.com, and that's T-U-G-G.com. And just demand it from AMC Theaters. Just give them a call at their corporate office. Send them emails. Ask for Spanish Lake in your town. That is going to be our quickest way to get to theaters right now.
Well, Lisa, Philip, it's been a pleasure having you come on today and talk about Spanish Lake and also Spanish Lake's connection to Ferguson. I've learned a lot, and I hope the audience did as well. And I hope you all go out and support Spanish Lake. And when it goes to Netflix, get it on Netflix. Netflix as well. Tongue tied here. And listen. We do this each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell a coworker, church member. Come and join us every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern, as we bring subjects like this to our stage. Listen, you guys, we got to get out of here. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.